the hardest part for me to learn is that if I'm purely discretionary and I don't have a target, then I'm stuck sitting here twiddling my thumbs and going, gosh, I hope it gets somewhere good.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro plus tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the China Shop, home of the Band of Traders podcast. My name is Kyle, and joining me tonight, I've got our director of guest procurement, Bear Goes Long. Bear must have been slacking at your job because it's just the two of us tonight.
Hey, you know, some weeks it's tough. It's tough. You know, with Baba off playing the Masters, what are we going to do?
Yeah, I saw the 2-pound steaks that they're eating over there. Scotty Scheffler is in charge of, I think. 2-pound ribeyes.
Oh, good man. Lord. Oh, that just sounds heavenly. I mean, I just had an 18-ounce prime rib, so I'm not complaining.
See, I can't do the prime rib. Prime rib is I'd rather have a ribeye. I don't know, like prime rib, but you get that little bit of smoke ring, but then the rest of it tastes kind of bland to me.
I
changed my mind. What am I missing?
Fresh horseradish.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. That's it. All right. Let's see what we got for show news here. Graham Glover from Price Squawk. He's going to be on this week's guest episode. And after that, I got to look at the name here. The Real Ariel, I think his name is on Twitter. Something that Joe set me up with on the Discord. So, trying to work out when that one's going to be. That'll probably be in the next week or two. He's launching a Discord server, trades with a lot of like well-known names. So a lot of high recommendations from him. Looking forward to sitting down with that guy. And then the other thing I wanted to say too is that guest episodes are probably going to start slowing down a little bit. I don't know if I made that announcement sooner or earlier, but like honestly, just been getting kind of tired of going through like all the like the background checks, like trying to like filter out all of the
sure
snake oil salesmen,
the snake oils, the grifters, the scammers, the con men, the Lambo photo idiots. Yeah,
some of them still manage to sneak through, but man, I'm just getting tired of dealing with that, and I'd rather just stick to either the people that I've talked to that I know are good and know what they're talking about and they got our best interests at heart, or listen to you guys and get recommendations that way. So if there's anybody that you know of that you want me to talk to, please send it my way, because I don't want to do the research anymore.
Well, actually, that reminds me. I just signed up for a class somewhere towards the end of the month with Rich Friesen.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Which class is that?
You have to ask me that right now.
I know, right?
I think it's just a Mind Over Markets class. He's running it. He said something on Twitter X about, oh, this is going to be the last Mind Over Markets class, which doesn't make any sense to me, but okay. But I saw that and I was like, oh, sign me up. I haven't talked to Rich in like 2 years.
Okay. So when does that start?
It's Mindmetrics.
Mindmetrics. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm going through that. Okay. Yeah. If you're going to start going through that, we should start a little group chat and do it together.
Yeah.
Definitely. In fact, we can, I can make a Discord channel if you want to do it on there too.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm up for that, man.
Yeah, I've been, that could be fun.
I've been trying to get back into it. I've been finding, I think I need that accountability. Like, if I'm relying on myself to do things, I'm not doing a great job of making sure I do those things.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I've been struggling a lot with is that it's not really a fine line, but I want to call it a fine line between strategy hopping.
Yeah.
And, you know, legitimately going, okay, I've matured my process to point XYZ. I need something else to help, you know, keep pushing me in a positive direction.
I think we were talking beforehand that you are working on learning a new process, and I kind of want to get into that at some point, but you just started talking about something there that I kind of want to dig into a little bit deeper too, which is the strategy hopping portion of it.
No, that leads into that discussion, because that was a big part of the thought process for me.
Yeah, I was kind of going through something similar with that this past couple of weeks, where it's less of feeling like I need something new and more like I need to take what I've learned and define it into something that is more, I don't know if it's repeatable, actionable, easier to work with, like easier to see, easier to follow, like just putting it to a plan, I think, is more... Like, don't start over with everything. Take all the things that I've learned and package it into something that is kind of like taking from all those things and putting it together, like Frankensteining it together, like Flaherty likes to say.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I found, you know, the whole trading growth process, I've oscillated between the extremes of, you know, we've mostly talked about my mental emotional process side of, you know, I realize it's like, oh crap, I've got this huge weakness over here and I need to work on this shit. And, you know, why is this stuff happening? Right. And then, you know, sometimes I'll get a little too overloaded, too overwhelmed in some of that stuff. And it's like, okay, let's just go work on the trading strategy and, you know, work, you know, go back and sit down and, spent a lot of time working with a couple of mentors. Flaherty, obviously, I've worked with a tremendous amount over the last few years, and Aaron. Mm-hmm. And they both have, you know, reasonably well-defined processes for developing levels and strategies around those levels and learned those and applied those. And they fit to varying degrees my personality.
Right.
And then inevitably what happens is I'll start to get in there, I'll find some success, and then I'll have mental, emotional crap bubble back up and, you know, throw a wrench in the works. And I have to sit down and go, okay, let's go back and work on that stuff.
I'm actually in the process of trying to dig the wrench out of the gears right now.
Yeah. I feel like it's a, you know, climb a mountain, you know, the switchbacks.
Yeah.
You know, you got to go up this way for a little while, fix these things. Okay, now you can shift back the other way, go up that way for a while.
So it'd be nice if it was like that and less like, it feels like you're sprinting up, you know, straight up to 300 feet and then falling backwards 175 feet before you catch. You're just trying to catch yourself before you fall back past where you started.
Yeah, or even you just get that greedy of, I want it, I want it, I want it. So you run up the hill as fast as you can, and you go, go, go. And then you run out of breath and you just collapse into a puddle on the ground and you're like,
So So here's something I started doing this before you guys jumped on. I was looking back through at like some of the stats, specifically in my live account, because I hadn't really checked through those in a while. And I was actually really happy to see that I'd gotten that account positive for the first time in quite some time.
Nice.
But I was looking through like the stats on there, and what really stood out to me was the winners and losers. Let me see if I can pull it up real quick, because I just kind of want to talk about the real data here.
Always good to have real data to look at.
I know, right? So it was the average profit and loss I was looking at. And, you know, do you still have Sierra charts? Are you still using that, or you want anything, something different?
I dropped off of Sierra charts last fall. I needed to really narrow my focus.
Yeah.
And kind of, you know, strip all the charts away. And part of that process was to say, okay, let's strip all the tools away.
Yeah.
And I went back to saying, okay, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to trade on the X platform, Top Setbacks.
Yeah.
And only trade there, and, you know, take away all the excuses for everything else so that I can just focus on levels and price action.
Well, here's the interesting thing that I pulled out. If you scroll all the way to the bottom of like your trade stats on Sierra charts, it'll show you consecutive winners, mm-hmm. consecutive losers, and then the frequencies, yep. and then the average profit and loss of those. And what really stood out was the consecutive winners, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Like the average profit was nearly double what the average loss of the consecutive losers was.
Yeah.
And that's, I'm onto it. Like, that's what I want to see. That's good. I need to lean into this. So really now what I want to go back through and look and see what I was doing throughout this last, you know, since January when I started collecting all these stats to see like, where am I having success? What are the things that are working and how can I lean into that some more? And I think a lot of it's going to revolve around doing stuff with the OR. For me, particularly, I like the 15-minute OR, maybe the 5-minute, I haven't mm-hmm. quite decided. I do like doing some stuff with the 30-second for looking for breakouts and stuff, but there's going to be a lot of, I think, going back to the drawing board and trying to work through like what kind of repeatable system can I put into place utilizing these elements that I like and that I've seen success with.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that I was kind of like leaning back. I wanted to go back to the OR, and I'm guessing your new process, based on who you said that you're working with, probably has something to do with that.
it has a heck of a lot to do with it. I mean, I've always loved trading the open and looking at it, but I never really did have a clean, well-defined process around that.
Mm-hmm.
I did spend a significant amount of time after the episode with Macro Tactical, you know, really focusing in and honing in on the 5-minute OR, which is it's not a lot of people are looking there.
Yeah.
And I do like tracking it, and it's a really interesting. I was trading that pretty heavily the last few months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was very dedicated to. I would mark the 5-minute OR on my chart every day, and so then I could look back. You know, during the day when we would come back towards it, it was amazing the how many inflection points you would see where it'd come down and it'd nibble off the 5-minute OR and take off again.
Yeah, especially like that first close above. Like if you're going to get a good trending day, sometimes that one touch on the OR high low mm-hmm. can be a spicy one too.
And the Euro close. Yeah. The Euro close loves to come back and touch the OR.
Euro close. Interesting. I don't think I've paid too much attention to that. What time is that one at?
10:30 central.
Okay.
Now that we're back in sync. So for 2 weeks when America did daylight stupid time early and then the rest of the year or the rest of the world, we were out of sync. And so the Euro close was another hour later.
Hot take here. Right? Could we just get rid of that altogether? Can we all just go to a standardized time?
Can we just go back to standard time and keep it so that, you know, solar noon is at noon. I mean, words have meaning. Last time I checked.
Yes, I'm of the other side of that. I don't care if it's 3 in the morning when I get up. I don't care what the clock says. It doesn't matter to me. If it's 3 in the sun, then that's the time I get up. That's when I get up. Well, whatever.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I would just like that sunlight to align a little better. But you know, we're both in pretty northern latitudes, so. Yeah. That swing between summer and winter is a lot more severe than
It goes the wrong way. Why aren't we trying to smooth things out so it's the same in the winter and the same in summer? No, instead we're making summer days longer and winter days shorter. It makes no sense.
You're not making them longer or shorter.
No, you're not.
You're just
that,
lying about what you're calling noon. Right. That's it. That's it. It's just this collective hallucination, this lie that says, oh, we're going to decide that 1 p.m. is noon.
Right.
What?
Okay, now get back on track. I'll tell you what I learned from Macro Tactical in that conversation. No, the thing that stood out to me in that conversation, we talked about how he likes to add maniacally once he starts to see something go his way. Was something that I spent a lot of time trying to get better at. And I think I've actually gotten to the point now where I can finally start adding to trades where I used to be terrified of it.
That is the most brutal skill to learn.
Oh, my God. The hardest thing is just saying, yep, it's come back to break even. We're wrong now. Let's stop trying to fight for this trade again. That anger of like, oh, it hasn't come back to my original entry. I should still have that one on if I hadn't moved my stop. Well, too bad.
Okay, so this is one of those areas where the platform can really help you.
Mm-hmm.
The last time I got really serious about learning that, I was on Sierra, and Sierra was great because you can set it up for LIFO, last in, first out.
I finally did set that up, actually.
Right.
Yeah.
So you set up LIFO, and so it's like, you know, you do some ads and it brings your average up, but then if you stop those ads out, it pushes your average back down to your original.
Right. Right.
It doesn't, now, of course.
But here's the thing. Okay. Here's how trading is so weird, right? Because if you say you're up 15 points on ES and like you try to put in an ad and it takes out your like 5 points above your break even, or it just takes out that one that you had, right? Like you're still 80, you still captured 15 points from the original entry. But once you've realized it, it's a lot harder to put that trade back on. Like, say you just accidentally hit the flatten button, you want to put it back on and then put your stop back to where it was. Very hard to do that, isn't it?
You don't.
Why not? Why is that so hard?
If you accidentally flatten the trade, you're done.
Why is that?
Because you've lost your entry.
But what does it matter if you just re-enter at the same spot you had, even if you...
Oh, well, because then psychologically you're staring at that yeah, unrealized right? loss.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't realized it. But that was going to come back to your system. And
that was something Trader Dante talked about on a video once. He says, like, somebody talks about the free trade they're in. It's like, oh, yeah, hit that flatten button on them and see what they do. Like, just tell them, oh, it's no problem. Just put it back on. Put your stop where it was. Like, they won't do it.
Nope.
I won't do it.
Nope.
Why is that? It seems like there's something there that... Because it shouldn't be any different, right?
There is. It's no longer a free trade because you realized it. You realized the profit out of the other one. And so, you know, do you want to give all of that back? Merritt Black calls it a give back, but yeah.
I wonder if that's something that'd be worth throwing into the trade plan. It's like, when I'm starting to feel greedy, I'm just going to flatten it out. And if I still want to put it back on, I can. But then that makes it much harder to make that decision, right?
Right. And you're totally violating your process, though. You're putting a trade on based off of FOMO.
I'm trying to stop myself from exercising extreme greed in this scenario.
I mean, it's just that it's like you flatten out of the trade. You know what, the entry's gone, it's gone, the trade's gone, walk away, wait for the next one.
Interesting.
It sucks, but it's gonna save you because otherwise you're entering a trade you haven't let go of the last trade.
Yeah.
So if your mind is stuck in the last trade, how can you take the next trade? Honestly, you're just getting revenge.
My question is, if I'm not willing to re-enter, if I just hit the flatten button because I'm feeling some trepidation, or just because I want to, or maybe I mistakenly, you know, twitched and scratched out of a trade I didn't mean to, if I can't put it back on, then that means that maybe I shouldn't have been in that trade for as long as I was in to begin with then, right? I mean, that's the counterpoint argument to that.
Was that your exit point?
I'm saying in this situation, no, it wouldn't have been.
No, it wasn't your exit point. So you've already violated the trade. The trade's gone.
So you're saying you've made the mistakes. Just, you're done anyway.
Own it. You made your mistake. Own it. Walk away. Let it go.
In case if anybody else has any thoughts on that, if you're listening, I don't think I've ever done this, but I'm going to ask for comments on that one. If you, how do you handle that situation? What are your thoughts on that? If you scratch out of a trade that you didn't mean to, do you re-enter and put your stops back, or is the trade done, like Bear says?
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you I've tried.
And, I think I have too.
And the only recollections I have are ending rather miserably
because it all goes
back. Basically. For me, that's like that. That's like a short circuit to tilt.
Right.
That you know that puts me one trade away from tilt. If
anytime you're making decisions based on what your P&L is doing, you're not making good decisions. At least that's what I've found.
Well, no, you're making decisions based on your emotion.
Right.
Of I was in a good trade. I accidentally flattened it. Oh, I should get back in. No, you wait for your next entry point. But that's the discipline process I'm in the middle of learning. That's where I'm at on my journey.
So let's talk then about the process then. Hang on, let me just go back. Can we mention the name of who you're working with?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Is this something that he's doing for other people, or is this just something that?
Oh no, this is very public. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, this is very public. I was struggling with a lot of the things that actually it sounds like you're talking about of it's like, okay, come back and sit down and really learn a consistent, scalable, repeatable process around the opening range is one part.
Mm-hmm.
And while we're at it, let's go ahead and learn a process for adding. And because adding into trades is incredibly difficult to do psychologically and emotionally and just a skill point. And, you know, I spent a lot of time trying to learn it on my own of going, okay, you know, focusing on that. Is this a spot that if I was flat, I would enter? For me, it's like, hey, is this a good pullback point?
Mm-hmm.
This is a good pullback point that I think is a pullback and not a reversal. Okay. So that's a spot that I would enter regardless. And that's what I've done in the past, but it gets very triggering on your greed aspect, as you pointed out, because, you know, you've gone from one contract to three contracts to five contracts to 10 contracts. And now that P&L number is moving much faster, especially if it's in a volatile market, like the last few weeks. And it becomes very easy to let yourself get tilted unless you have a good target, a well-defined target. And this is just me.
Yeah.
So if the trade, you plan your trade your plan. And so if my trade says I'm going to wait for it to pass through 57 and I'm targeting 92, just making numbers up. And In the middle, there's a break point at 73. Again, making numbers up. Then I'm going to know, okay, my job is to take the trade at 57. And as soon as it moves in my positive direction to protect that trade.
Mm-hmm.
And if it passes through 72 and it's still got positive momentum, I want to add. And so, but I'm going to protect that ad as well. So, you know, as soon as I put those ads in, I'm going to put stops in so that if it comes back, I'm just going to let those go. My job then is to sit there and do nothing until it hits 92.
How are you protecting your ads? Talk me through that then. Are you just putting in ads or stops for the ads and leaving your original entry stop back where it was?
Okay,
or are you the whole average up and trying to, because that's what always gets me triggered and tilted is when I ruin a great trade or a great entry with a bad ad.
Right. And some of that's going to depend on your platform piece. I mean, what I'm doing is I'm immediately pulling my stop up to my new break even.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the platform I'm in, you know, Sierra is awesome. Sierra will treat every trade independently.
No, so I'm on your boat though. I want my, if I'm starting to add now, I'm putting my stops at break even and I'm trying to add in a way that I'm keeping that average below whatever structural point that I don't want it to be testing again.
Right. So, okay. So we've gone down a few different rabbit holes right here.
Right.
So where I was chasing is that for me, the hardest part for me to learn is that if I'm purely discretionary and I don't have a target, then I'm stuck sitting here twiddling my thumbs and going, gosh, I hope it gets somewhere good. Or I hope it builds some structure so that I have an excuse to drag my stop up. Or I've got, you know, some arbitrarily defined target. You know, it's like whatever default target is for my metric. If I have a target planned in advance, so in this case, I knew when I took the trade at 57 that my goal was 92. So my stop is at 92.
Take profit.
Once I'm in the trade, the discipline, and this is the hard part, the discipline is to do nothing.
Yeah.
It either hits my target at 92 or it comes back and stops me out at 57. There's no in between.
I don't have trouble with that as much. In fact, I'm much more comfortable, I think, than the average person of putting a trade on, putting the stops in place and just saying, it's going to do what it's going to do and I'm going to go eat lunch or something. Like, I don't mind that at all.
Good for you. I suck at that.
Oh, really?
I suck at that.
So I find it easier to just walk away. I find it harder to sit and watch it.
Yeah, I mean, and that is the stress because then you get the temptation to meddle.
Yep.
And that's where I have like hilarious results where, you know, like I'll put a trade on in a practice account and be like, oh, that's a really, and you know, it's got its defined target and stops, and I'm like, oh, that's a really good trade. And I'll flip over to a different account, and then at the end of the day, I come back and I'm like, how did I make 12,000 in my practice account? Oh, because I put on this trade and I totally forgot about it. And it was a trend day and it literally went from the open to close.
Right.
For 8 hours and, you know, caught the whole freaking trend. Oh, well, gee, why didn't I do that in my real account?
Let's do that more often.
Yeah, in my real account.
Yeah.
So where are we going here? So I really struggled a lot with some of that stuff around defined process. I feel like I've got my psychological stuff together enough in one point.
Sounds like the major missing piece for you is not having your exits really well defined.
That's a big part of it.
Yeah.
And the discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And
but the discipline's hard to have if you don't know where your exits and entries are going to be, right? Because
plan your trade. If you don't have a trade plan, then what are you doing?
Right.
Where can you draw discipline from?
Mm-hmm.
And so one person I've been talking a lot with, not a lot with, but I've had several conversations with over the years is Pax.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Pax has a very consistent message out to the world around traders. You know, one of his key catchphrases is 90% of traders fail. So why would you want to trade like 90% of people? Why would you want to think like 90% of people?
Right.
Because if you're going to be a successful trader, you have to change your thinking. And he's always sharing a lot of the things that he learned in the pit. And
he did a lot of work with Penny Lane Blaine. I remember when we were collaborating
with
her.
Penny did a tremendous amount of work together. And you know, his passion, not just for trading, but really his passion for people,
mm-hmm.
just shines through in all of that stuff. And he's one of the few people that really made that successful transition from the pit to the screens. I mean, he made tens of millions of dollars in the NASDAQ. He was the biggest NASDAQ trader, lost it all completely, mm-hmm. lost it all, went completely broke. You know, at one point he's told this story many times. You know, at one point him and his wife are, you know, dragging the couch cushions for quarters to buy milk for the kids.
Oof.
And he would get on the screens and he would trade the open. If he traded well that day, yay, celebrate. If he didn't trade well that day, he would go drive Uber,
mm-hmm.
to get money to keep the family fed.
History isn't just boring names and dates. It's weird, messy, and full of what-were-they-thinking moments. The Buck Starts Here dives into the financial fiascos, questionable deals, and outright chaos that helped build America, $1 at a time. We mix in serious history from a fresh perspective, real, deep dives into the numbers and the moments that shape the country without the boring lecture. From presidential blunders to almost states and the time an international war almost started over a pig, we break down the key events that made, and nearly broke, the nation. It's the fascinating untold history you won't find in the textbooks. Subscribe to the Buck Starts Here podcast for a deeper look at presidential history that's anything but dull.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Yeah.
So he's really, you know, walked through the fire and climbed back up and built back up successfully.
Have you managed to convince him to do one of our humanity episodes yet? Because, man, it sounds like we really need to get him on there.
I would love to. I'd love to talk to him. I'd love to have Cleo talk to him and do one of those episodes. Yeah. But he has built a screen process around the processes that he learned in the pit.
Yeah.
And those processes are entirely based around the opening range. The opening range, as defined by the CME and as defined by this pit committee, is 30 seconds. And he will never hesitate to tell somebody that there is only one opening range. It's 30 seconds. It's defined by the CME.
He doesn't like a 15-minute OR?
No, 15 minutes is something else. And, yeah, you know, yeah. 30 minute is auction market theory and I'm sorry, volume profile.
Right. So what is, so I need to think of a different name, otherwise he'll never talk to us.
No. Just don't ask him about other ORs. Yeah. It's pretty entertaining. There's been some spaces recently that you can go back and listen to. They were recorded that had those conversations. Okay, so but he has a very, very well defined process around trading the OR, and based off of, okay, you know, moves through the R, let's take this. And he's been pretty public about, you know, you put on a four lots, everything's in fours, you know, you put on a four lot coming out of the trade. And then depending on the ADR, ATR, mm-hmm. you pay for that trades at 4 points or 10 points or 15 points, depending on how much volatility there is.
Yeah.
And so you take one lot off at 4 points. But also what you're doing is that as soon as the trade is moving in your favor, mm-hmm. you put on a break-even stop. So if it ever comes back to you, you're out for, you know, a haircut and a scratch.
Yeah.
And he's even said sometimes he goes, I don't bother looking at my stats because, you know, my win percentage is probably 10%, but who cares?
It depends on how you define your win percentage then at that point too, right?
Right. But yeah. he's talking about scratches. Scratches right. don't count. So, is what he's trying to teach.
look at what 2 Year Flipper just recently posted on his stats. It's something similar to that. I think he said he makes on like 14%, 8 to 14%, and he loses on 6%.
Yeah, 8%. 8% of his trades make money.
But that 8% difference between his winners and losers is where all that money is made. Everything else is a scratch. So lots and lots of scratches. That seems to be a running theme between some of these old pit traders. It's that they're not afraid to scratch and they'll do it quick.
Yeah, Jedi Marcus told that to me years ago. He was like, you know, he goes, scratches just don't count. He says, you know, in the pet, we just, you don't even want to think about how many scratches we took. It just doesn't matter. So again, so you come in and you pay for the trade and you have a target, and where those targets are, that's deep math that PAX only shares once you get much deeper into the learning process.
Well, we said we wouldn't spill any proprietary secrets. So yeah.
Right. And I'm very early into this journey, and you and I know other people that are in the Discord with PAX. So we can talk about that when it's not being recorded. But this system, on a very, very rough level, because again, I'm just early in the learning stages, but it's about you take the trade out of the OR, you pay for the trade, you have a defined profit, but you don't take it all off. You take some of it off, so you're going to realize some of those gains, and but you know, keep at least a runner on there, and then somewhere in there you'll have another level where you'll add to that trade. So you'll add to that trade, but as soon as it moves in favor, you bring the stop for that trade to your entry. You still keep your original stop for your original entry. And like Sierra will let you have multiple stops.
Yeah.
I'm about to switch back to Sierra because of this, but yeah. So, spoiler alert, either that or MotoWave, different discussion. But what you do is you just keep adding in and compounding. So I had a trade last week, was as I worked through these levels, and I realized profits and I added in. So, you know, I might go in and, you know, I might have 3 contracts in and I hit a level, I add 4, I take one off. So now I've got 6 going, and I hit another one and I add 4. So now I've got 10 going. And, you know, I had one trade where we had a nice little trend move, and as it worked through the levels, I was up to 20 micros.
Jeez. And this in volatility too?
Yeah, 20 micros that went 20 micros that went significantly in my favor, and actually I'd had the target and oh gosh, that target was really nicely defined, because basically it hit the target, it was going down. I think the target was at like 67. It hit 62 and went back up like 70 points. But I was out. I was flat. I was like, oh wow, did that just happen?
So let me ask you this question then. How different, or how well defined is this new process you're looking at compared to what you're doing before?
I think it's much more defined in my mind. I will say that the process I was trading with Aaron was very similar. Aaron lays out zones on the chart, and the process that I worked with that worked really well for me with Aaron was trading zone to zone.
Yeah.
And so it was, you know, I'd enter based off of an exit, based off of movement through a zone. It's actually really similar. And then I would target the next zone. But I would typically either get all the way out at the next zone, or I would, you know, basically like drag my stop up to, you know, just underneath of it, you know, just in case it pulled back. And that worked very well. It's actually a similar style, but I didn't have that add.
I'm just curious if there were holes that you noticed. I'm just curious if there was... Like, looking back at what you know now to what you're doing before, was there something that you wish you could have gone back and, like, there's something you would have known to do beforehand, like having better defined exits or something along those lines?
No, it really had to do with the discipline.
Yeah.
That's for me. That discipline's the huge weak point.
So what improved the discipline then? Is it just the belief or the respect that you have for PAX?
It has to do with that, but also, you know, another one of his phrases that he likes to share is he says, I'm a naturally undisciplined person. Mm-hmm. I have to build structure and discipline into my daily life to help me.
Yeah. I can relate to that.
He talks about, he gets up, he has the exact same morning routine. You know, he gets up, he makes the bed, every day, mm-hmm. and exercises and does these things. And to build that discipline. And the other thing that's very interesting and educational is while you're in the trade, if you're in no man's land, mm-hmm. he is very clear of, he's either very clear about, hey, look, we're in the chop zone. Don't trade. Nobody trade. Nobody should be trading this. You enter here, you exit here. That's it. In between, nothing. You don't do anything. You'll see that he'll very consistently, he'll go into conversations. He'll go into research. He'll start asking people, hey, talk to me about this. Let's talk about this. You know, let's talk about this part of the process. And
he does a good job of distracting people when it's not time to be trading.
Kind of right. Like because he's distracting himself.
Yeah.
And I mean, a lot of these conversations, I swear these are conversations that these people were having in the pit. You know, they were having these same conversations in the pit 30 years ago, you know, about, hey, where do you want to go to dinner? Blah, blah, blah. Oh, did you check out this restaurant? Those kind of conversations that you could see them standing in the pit and going, okay, we're in between my price levels. I really don't care what's happening here.
Right.
And so that's learning for me. There's a huge challenge there of learning to not care. When price is between levels, and that's go back to Sean and urge surfing,
right? Yeah,
you know, just sitting there and watching and knowing, okay, either I'm in a trade, or you know what, I fat fingered an exit and I flattened my trade, or I screwed up my stop, and so I'm flat and I'm waiting, mm-hmm. and that urge surfing of sitting there and watching the price action and knowing that my job is to do nothing. Oh, dude, for an ADD kid. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, I still got some work to do on that.
And I really hope that I have not butchered my descriptions of process and
I think we hit the key points. I think you did a good job of explaining. Because I think the things to take away is just the more well-defined that plan becomes, the more faith you're going to have in it, the easier it is to have discipline to stick with it. And mm-hmm. I think that's where my issues have been rooted in, is not having that plan well-defined. I've been saying that for probably the last year and a half or so.
Well, and it's a lot easier to have that discipline when you have a mentor and you have other almost like desk mates.
The accountability has been
right. You have other people in the group that you're all working on this together, so you kind of have a little bit of group accountability about, oh,
I've been kind of withdrawing more into myself and not taking advantage of the group as much as I used to lately. And I think that's a good point you'd made there. Like, mm-hmm. we were talking about earlier, like the going through and doing the mind metric stuff, like with you, I think would be really helpful for me to give me like somebody to compete with almost. Like, you know, yeah. It kind of makes it almost like, oh, did you do your work? Okay, well, shit, he did his. Now I guess I better go do mine. Otherwise, I'm falling behind. Like, it gives me something to measure myself against. And I need some other people like pushing me. Is doing it for myself. Apparently, I'm not very good at doing things for just myself.
I struggle.
Yeah.
I definitely struggle. I mean, the biggest takeaways are the things that I said I really wanted to go in, which is learn a new process, and changing contracts, changing that contracts isn't the right word, but you know, I've been a dyed in the wool hardcore NQ trader for the last 3 years.
And you're trendy now with me, right?
For me to flip a switch and okay, in the fall I was doing a lot of trading both ESNQ side by side with Aaron, which was fun. But for me to like turn off NQ and I literally had to just turn it off my screen
so that
I'm only watching ES. That was huge. But I think that's also something that's helped me set aside some of my old bad habits, because I'm setting aside some of those NQ habits to learn better habits in ES.
See, I think I had a kind of a similar issue. I quit watching NQ because I felt like the volatility and the increased price action was causing me to get more tilted, or was causing me to not trade my plan as often as I wanted to. But now I look back at ES, and ES is trading like NQ, like now. I think that was part of my struggles the past couple of weeks, is that like I'm not allowed to look at the 30-second chart anymore. Like, that's not the chart I want to stare at, right? I want to be at 5-minute time frame or higher. Well, now my 5-minute looks like my 30-second chart. And so that just kind of clicked in my head recently. Like, oh, okay.
Oh, especially with this volatility.
Like, I need to zoom out more. Like, I need to be on probably a 30-minute chart at this point. And, man, that's hard to slow yourself down that much and take yourself back.
Yeah, or lay all your levels out on your 4-hour chart and have your 4-hour chart on one side and your 5-minute chart or your 15-minute chart. For me, it's a 5-minute, but five-minute chart on next to it.
Yeah.
So that you can keep an eye on the big picture macro structure on the 4-hour chart and the little wiggles in the 5-minute chart.
I feel like we're getting ready to touch into some good, bad, and ugly here, so we might as well just embrace it, huh?
oh man.
So I think we've been kind of touching on this for a bit here, but being slow to adjust has been kind of my issue this whole past, actually since I went on vacation, really, which I never fully got a chance to adjust to the new administration trading regime that we're in.
Oh, yeah.
I wasn't trading during the last Trump turn, so I didn't get to see how this was then. And
you and me both.
Having two trips, I mean, I've been, like, out of the past month, I've been gone for 2 weeks of that. Like, that's not...
Oh, wow.
Really a good way to learn how to adapt to a new volatility regime. And so I don't think I've given myself enough time to kind of adapt and adjust. And that's my plan for next week, is to not trade and just spend that time going through replaying charts and making the adjustments that I need to make in order to be successful. And so that's the bad. It's probably borderline ugly, because, you know, you're doing the same thing over and over again, having terrible results and not making changes. Like, that's definition of insanity.
On the good side. And sometimes you have to shake yourself up. That was part of the reason I finally gave myself permission to join Pax's group. It's like, okay, I need something to agitate that learning process.
Right. I'm not looking to strip everything down and tear it down to the ground and start over, but I am looking to put a little more structure or some definitions of something that I am seeing that is having success. And that's what I want to lean into that more. I want to define that better. And so, yeah, I'm on the same boat. I'm not looking to tear it all down and nuke it to the ground like we used to do in the past. But yeah. I did, however, and this is my good, I did have the urge today, actually, to delete the lockouts and just completely nuke everything. I was looking for the setting. I was about to, and I was like, wait a minute. Let's take a step back here. What am I doing? Why am I doing that? Why am I feeling the need to tear everything down or just blow it all up?
Yeah.
I stepped back and, you know, I did a good job of keeping all of that to the prop account that I've been trading, at least. Like, my live account was never in jeopardy, but still, like, to be that close to it again is kind of a little bit terrifying, but it also feels really good to see that I can pull myself back from that and not give in to it.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Yep. I did give in to that a little bit in my sim account.
Yeah.
Which is not an excuse, because your brain doesn't really know the difference between trading sim and trading real and trading prop or combine.
But if you're going to do it somewhere, at least it's there.
Yeah. It's like, okay, cool. I let off that steam, but I have to learn to, I can't let it off there.
Yeah. The worst thing that can happen for you is when you let off that steam and keep hitting green trades over and over and over again every time you do it, to the point where you're like, well, shit, I should just trade this, and then it goes to shit.
I did have one day where I locked myself out of the other accounts and I was on full sim, and I went full tilt, and I went down $50,000 on my sim account.
Ooh, that's impressive.
Yeah, it was.
That's pretty good. What, yeah, that's a high score.
Yeah. What's more terrifying is that I actually got it back up to zero on the day. And I ended up the day, my end of day result was like $500.
How many contracts were you trading?
I was all the way up to the max they would let you do, which was 15 ES at some point.
Okay, Sierra points. Lets you do 1,000 lot clips, or you can do.
Oh no,
as
no,
you
this
want.
Is yeah, this I've... is this was Top Steps practice practice sim account.
I've tried just clicking the button on 10,000 just to see what it would do on sim. But then I learned really quick that you don't mess around with sim, like changing your bracket orders like that, because the first time you accidentally clip into six when you mean to clip into six micros and you get into six minis, like that'll shit a brick.
Yes, it will. Yes, it will. Yes, it will. But yeah, so my performance curve on that day is hilarious, because it's like, oh, red, deep red. And then it comes all the way back and has this like big spike back up to like green. And there's just like this little sliver of green where I ended the day.
Well, that was Kara. Yeah. You might want to look a little bit closer into that run up. I remember 2 years also talking about the best performance he ever had was actually recovering a portion of a red day. It wasn't even a day that ended green. He just talks about a run he had where he was down, I think, like 40K or something to start the day off of like a something that happened.
Yeah, like an overnight fat finger. Yeah.
Yeah, something along those lines. And like to claw back almost all of it, not even all of it. Like he points to that mm-hmm. as like one of his best stretches.
No,
I find
mean,
that fascinating. That's process.
that's your story of survivors.
Right.
DCP has shared in several spaces. He had a similar issue where he had a bad trade and, you know, he was down $700,000 in a day and triggered it back that same day.
God damn.
But, you know, for every, you know, for the two people we know that have done that.
Yeah.
There's how many hundreds that washed out?
You don't hear those stories.
No.
Yeah. Because they're not around to tell the tale.
No.
All right. Anything good out of your week you want to talk about?
Yeah. I mean, learning that process, I did. I had a couple of, you know, really phenomenal days.
Mm-hmm.
In, you know, multiple funded accounts and really happy with those. And then I think the other really good thing is that I have obeyed my daily loss limits.
Yeah, me too. It's the one good thing I've done all week.
I've not regretted it because I'm going into the day and I'm trying to remind myself. I'm like, I have to slow down. I have to slow down. And on days where I just hit that daily loss limit really quick, it's because I didn't slow down and I improvised. Mm-hmm. I did not follow my process. And so for me, I look at that as a reward of, you know what? I didn't follow my process. I got my fingers slapped and okay.
Yeah, but your fingers were slapped. They weren't cut off.
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
That's the thing that Bob always says. Our job is to make sure we're here to trade tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like that's our main
job. Yeah. Always trade for tomorrow. I mean, that there's all those great pit sayings, you know, ride or ride out, trade for tomorrow.
It's like two traders. Traders that trade today and traders that trade tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good stuff, man. Yeah, that's been something that's been the one like takeaway for me too this week, because I can point to is I can say I didn't exceed my personal loss limit, like not even mm-hmm. the max
yeah,
allowable
my personal
one.
Yeah.
I put mine in place, and that's the one I didn't exceed. And
yeah,
man, I tell you, the temptation was very strong this week.
Yeah, I mean most of my accounts, my maximum loss limit is to take the account to zero. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that would be really bad. So for me to have my little $450 limit in there feels pretty good.
I try to give myself like 10 points ES per trade total, and then I get four of those. If I lose more than that, then that's it.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's what I really love about this process that I'm learning.
Yeah.
It speaks to me very well, which is the scratch
mm-hmm.
of I used to be really, really good at it, and it's bothering me. I'm having a hard time learning how to scratch again. So yeah, I've
gotten really bad at that.
Those days where I bonk out, I put myself into sim. That's one of the reasons I ended up down 50 grand in sim, is because I was sitting there effing around in sim and full ES contracts when I should have been in Mez. but one of the things that I was doing was intentionally just entering a trade and then trying to go to break even as fast as possible. It's like enter, go, break him.
Oh, so you're actually working on something.
I was working on my scratch.
If you're working on an actual skill, then if you're doing that, then who cares what the dollar amount lost?
Yeah,
or won
I was working
on
my
point.
Scratch. Well, I ended up on those because then I'd get bored or I'd get frustrated or I'd get abused, and I'd just enter a trade and then I'd take off the stops and walk away and
yeah.
It's like do those things that everybody says. Never ever do, and it's like, oh yeah, that really is
sometimes
that bad.
Sometimes you have to do the things that everyone tells you not to do just to see why it doesn't work. But at least you're doing those in sim, not doing those in the live account. We can keep those in sim.
I've done that kind of stupid crap enough in funded accounts. That,
make sure you're in sim when you do those things. All right. Well, I think that's probably gonna do it for today's episode though. So please join me in thanking Bear for their contributions tonight. You can do that by clicking on links in the show notes. You can visit vantatrading.com to help support the show. You can visit bandoftraderspodcast.com to stay up to date with everything we have to offer. When you're finished with all that, catch up on your presidential history with Eric and I on The Buck Starts Here. We just got started on James Monroe last week. We'll be back soon with another exciting episode. But until that day, like, share, subscribe to all the things, and have a green week. Woohoo!
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro plus tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max 1 offer per account.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only, does not constitute financial or investment advice, and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations.
Produced by China Shop Productions.